Welcome to Hockey Mountain High, your go-to Avalanche podcast. Arif Dean here of Mile High Sports. Of course, presented by Superbook Sports, our sponsor for the show this season. And I'm here to talk about the Avalanche's 7-4 victory over the Philadelphia Flyers, as well as the road trip as a whole, and then some whopper news that broke, not related to the Avalanche, but the New York Islanders, just as that Avalanche game ended. But let's start with the victory today, and forgive me from now if I say tonight a few times. We love matinee games. We love them when they're at home at Ball Arena. They're even funkier, and I love them more when they're on the East Coast, and the Avalanche end up playing at 11 a.m. Mountain Time local here in Denver, which was just absolutely great to see. So the game starts, the Avalanche are getting completely outplayed. They had, I believe it was 84 shot attempts against, the most they've had this whole season. And you know, ultimately, the kind of the theme of the road trip has been, outside of the Montreal game, which coincidentally they lost, the theme of the road trip has been starting slow. And it happened again. The only difference is this time, Colorado escaped the first period with a 2-0 lead. And I thought it was really fascinating because they had one power play opportunity and zero shots on it. And obviously, I'm talking about power play opportunities strictly, specifically in that first period. Alexander Georgiev faced 12 shots, stopped them all. Colorado had just 5 on goalie Carter Hart and scored twice. So it was a very fortunate period for them. You know, kind of a similar theme to the rest of the road trip for the most part, but different in the terms that Colorado was the one that took a multi-goal lead into the intermission. And then they come out of the break. Manson and Wood with the assist, Nathan MacKinnon with the goal 43 seconds in to make it 3-0. Obviously, Philly answered back pretty quickly, but it was kind of a back and forth game, 3-1, 4-1, 4-2, 5-2, and then there was a little bit of a scare there where Forster and Atkinson scored just under 3 minutes apart before a late penalty from Scott Laughton, which he was livid about going into the box. And John Tortorella, after the game in his post-gamer, did say that he didn't think it was a penalty. I thought, you know, I hate commenting on refs, they're inconsistent. It was, you know, it's a standard of the game. Sometimes that one was called a penalty, sometimes it's not. It just so happened to be called a penalty today, that hooking call on Laughton. So it's hard to argue there. Granted, I could see the case that both Laughton and Tortorella had. Well, the Avalanche get that power play, and 49 seconds into it, Mikko Rantanen from Kale McCarr and Jonathan Drouin makes it 6-4, setting up for everybody's favorite empty net goal. Nathan MacKinnon comes in on a 2-on-0 breakaway with Logan O'Connor trailing behind him. MacKinnon gets into the zone onside, settles the puck down, passes up his own hat trick because he had 2 goals to give it to Logan O'Connor to allow the Avalanche's hard-working third line bottom six forward to record his first career hat trick. And just a classy, classy move from MacKinnon. When he was speaking on Altitude TV to Katie Goss after the game, he did mention that, you know, the common theme when you're on one of those 2-on-0 breakaways and it's an empty netter and you're the puck holder is you pass it up. And you know, we see it all the time in the NHL. This is not strictly a MacKinnon thing or a Colorado Avalanche thing. But it just so happened to be that the guy trailing behind him was the other guy with 2 goals in O'Connor. So it just made for a great story there. Logan O'Connor, and, you know, kind of shifting toward wanting to speak about that, Logan O'Connor playing with Ross Colton and Miles Wood, who's been back for 3 games. And by the way, Miles Wood has 5 points in those 3 games. That line has kind of, you know, they played a lot together this season, but recently they have really been going. It took a little bit of time for them to truly get that chemistry the way they have had it the last 2-3 games, but there is no arguing that line right now. There is no arguing what those 3 are doing together, and it really raises a question that I've had all season, and it goes back to the offseason, back to when JJ and I were doing this podcast together, and the Avalanche signed the many, many guys they signed and acquired on or before July 1st. And we kept talking about how they were one forward away. Obviously, you know, this is when we thought Ryan Johansson would work as a second line center and things like that. We kept talking about how they were one forward away because you got Wood and Colton on the second line, but you want to keep, you know, like I was saying in the summer, you want to keep O'Connor on the fourth line with Cogliano and Ben Myers or Olofsson or whoever ends up being the guy at center to replace Darren Helm. And they went out and signed Tomas Tatar in September, and October, November, December, 3 months later, less than 100 days later, Tatar was shipped off to Seattle for a fifth-round draft pick. And you end up in a scenario where now you're probably going to need another depth forward to replace Tatar. You know, whether or not Logan O'Connor is going to play on the third line, you ultimately want another option because injuries happen, especially in the playoffs. So they trade Tatar, and now we're back to this question again. Arturi Lehkonen's expected back next week. Bowen Byram's also expected back next week. We'll get to him later, one of the defensemen. Arturi Lehkonen's expected back. My assumption is, based off what Jared Bednar told us before this road trip about how he wants Lehkonen playing with Ryan Johansson, and at the time he said Val Nichushkin as well, but obviously we know Nichushkin's going to be out for a little bit. He's on his personal leave with the and he's in the NHLPA player assistance program. So when Lehkonen comes back, my assumption is we're going to see Lehkonen play with Ryan Johansson and probably Andrew Cogliano, maybe Joel Kiviranta, something like that, to keep Wood, Colton, and O'Connor together. But when Valeri Nichushkin returns and your second line becomes Lehkonen, Johansson, and Val Nichushkin, and whether Johansson remains or not, I still think he will get traded, is beyond the point. The point is you're going to have a second-line center playing with Lehkonen and Nichushkin and then Drouin and Rantanen with Nathan MacKinnon. There's your top six. The question that I have is, when you're targeting a depth forward, does it have to be somebody who pushes O'Connor back down to the fourth line, similar to the Tomas Tatar signing, or have we seen enough from O'Connor to say, you're a top-nine guy, let's just bring in another depth option similar to Kiviranta or whatever it may be, just to have more bodies and more options available? And I keep going back and forth on this because in the beginning of the season, I said having Logan O'Connor on the fourth line is a must. Now it's kind of like having Logan O'Connor on the fourth line is a luxury. And whether it's a luxury this team can afford or not is hard to answer right now. Because we know right now the two things the Avalanche need most are, in no particular order, number one, goaltending help. And they don't necessarily need a starter. I know that Georgiev's stats are struggling, and the Avs are letting in a lot of three-goal games lately. But it's either that is your top option in terms of needs, your biggest priority, or it's the second-line center position, where the assumption is, any trade involving a second line center is going to involve Ryan Johansson going back the other way, even if it means you have to pay more for the other team to take on Johansson and his contract, given he has one more year at $4 million. So my question is, where does the luxury of Logan O'Connor being on the fourth line now rank in your priority and in your list of priorities? Because the way that I see it, do you have enough assets to trade to bring in another goalie to also replace Ryan Johansson and get rid of his contract? And on top of that, do you need help at D? Do you want to get another guy in at D? What if you end up trading one of your D for center help? Would that be a bigger priority than the luxury of having Logan O'Connor on the fourth line? Because those are all the questions that Chris McFarland has to answer. You know, we saw two years ago when the Avalanche made some moves. They made a string of moves. They brought in a lot of forward help in terms of Lehkonen, Cogliano, and Nico Sturm. And they shifted Tyson Jost out of the lineup in the trades. And then they brought in Josh Manson. And all the other assets that were moved from the lineup were draft picks and prospects that are not on the current lineup at the time. So it was just Tyson Jost. Funny thing is, by the way, I think Nico Sturm should be one of the guys the Avs target. Granted, $2 million is a lot for a fourth line center. But if you can get San Jose to eat a little bit of it, that would be a lot of fun. Maybe that's the move that gets Johansson out of here, you know? But anyway, I'm starting to think the Avalanche don't necessarily need to replace what Tatar gave them on the third line. I'm starting to think, yes, sure, they do need forward help. You know, maybe they bring in a guy of the caliber of someone like what they did last year with Matt Nieto, and that way you have, in a healthy lineup, again, Drouin, McKinnon, Rantanen, Lekkonen and Nichushkin playing with whoever the 2C is. Let's assume Johansson's off the team. Wood, Colton, and O'Connor on the third line. And then your fourth line is Cogliano, Olofsson, and let's say Kiviranta, and, you know, maybe you brought in somebody like Nieto or, you know, maybe Ben Myers. And not specifically Nieto. I'm saying like a Nieto-caliber player, similar to that acquisition last year. Someone who you know is going to play behind O'Connor. And give O'Connor the opportunity to remain on that third line. So just, you know, something, just a little food for thought here as it's January 20 and the trade deadline is March 8th. What is that? 11 plus 8, 19. Add the 29 days in the middle. We're looking at 47 days till the trade deadline. Not a lot, you know. We're just over 6 weeks away from the trade deadline. We're just under 7 weeks away, I should say, from the trade deadline. So these are just some questions that Chris McFarland, Joe Sakic, and the Avs are going to have to answer between now and then. I do want to shift from there to the defense, but before doing so, I want to tell you guys about the sponsor here, Superbook Sports. We are changing the game. Win some money this season with Superbook Sports, the most trusted name in sports gambling, with a direct line to Las Vegas. And now, when you use the promo code MILEHIGH, that's two words, MILEHIGH, you score up to $250 with their first bet bonus. Win or lose, Superbook will match your first bet up to $250 with promo code MILEHIGH. Download the Superbook Sports app, enter the promo code MILEHIGH, and you'll get $250 courtesy of Superbook Sports. Visit superbook.com for terms and conditions. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Moving on to the defense, Bowen Byram is expected back during this break. And by break, I mean the Avalanche are off Sunday. They're going to practice Monday. They're going to practice Tuesday. They have a home game Wednesday, practice Thursday, home game Friday. And then they're off from January 26th until, I believe, February 5th when they start another road trip in New York against the Rangers and then the Devils in a back-to-back. Bo Byram's coming back next week. Basically, in the next 4 days. With Byram back, and with Girard, with Manson, with Taves Makar, there's your top five. The question is, for me, does Jack Johnson stay in the lineup? I think he does. Or do the Avalanche keep Sam Malinsky up? Malinsky has been playing some really good hockey, and to be quite honest with you, there's another conversation that I'll probably get into to be had about being able to unload one of your Byram or Girard contracts to help that second line center position, probably because of how good Sam Malinsky has been and because I think you can trust him as a number 4 or 5 guy in the NHL. Malinsky's got 10 points in 21 games this season. So he's pitching in offensively, giving you that, you know, roughly 35 to 40 point pace. He's a plus 5. In his last 3 games, he has a goal and 3 assists. He has a point in every single game. He played 13 minutes against Philly, 13:44 against Boston, 17 minutes against Ottawa. And he's seeing a lot more ice time than he did early in the season when he was playing a lot of 10 and 12 minute games in his first run in early December to mid-December. So it really does raise the question of, does he come out of the lineup? Does he deserve to come out of the lineup, I should say? Because I think he does come out of the lineup for the sole purpose that if you keep Malinsky in and you make Jack Johnson your number 7, you're going to send Caleb Jones down. And Caleb Jones going down means Caleb Jones has to clear waivers. And I don't think Caleb Jones will clear waivers. And then what happens is you've lost an asset, you've lost a body, and now you're setting yourself up for when you are 2 injuries deep, which the Avalanche have been just recently. Manson and Byram were out. Both Caleb and Malinsky were in the lineup with Jack Johnson. You are setting yourself up for Jack Johnson being your number 7 and then needing to dig into the AHL for someone like Brad Hunt, who hasn't played NHL minutes this year, to be your number 8 defenseman. And you just can't afford to do that. So does Sam Malinsky deserve to get sent down? Probably not. But because of his rookie status and his ability to get sent down and not clear waivers, it probably will likely end up, assuming no injuries between now and Wednesday and Bowen Byram is back on Wednesday, it'll likely end up with Molinsky getting sent down, Jack Johnson remaining in the lineup, and Caleb Jones continuing to do what Jared Bednar has said about him all along, is a player that knows his role, that can be called upon when needed, but knows that he is the number seven defenseman likely to be a healthy scratch on most nights. So it is just proper asset management to send Molinsky down, even though he is probably one of your top six best defensemen on this team right now. I have no big issues with the way Jack Johnson has played this year. I'm not saying he's a perfect player. I'm not saying he's helping you in every possible way. But I don't think that he's been any kind of a scapegoat in my eyes. But at the same time, you know, I still think the way Molinsky has been playing and the way he's pitched in and the offensive flashes he's shown, the ability to score on the power play and pitch in on the power play and just his brilliance in general, you're starting to see a guy who should be a top six defenseman on this team. But again, given the numbers game, I just don't think it's going to happen. Now, what that does do is it raises a bigger question, because one of the questions or one of the theories that I have, and I need to make this clear. First of all, what I share right now, whatever your thoughts are about it, please do link this part of the podcast or put a bookmark in this part of the podcast and tweet at me and let me know what you think as soon as you hear this. No sources behind this. I have not spoken to anybody. I'm not breaking any type of insider news, but I have a theory that Bowen Byram is not going to be a Colorado Avalanche for long. And it's simply because Byram strikes me as a guy that knows Makar and Taves are here for the long run, and he can't play behind those guys forever. He deserves and should have an opportunity to be a number one or at least a top line guy on another team elsewhere. So the other theory that I have about Byram, you know, he's locked up for this year and next year, and then he's an RFA, so the Avalanche control his rights. What this means is the Avalanche have set themselves up to have an opportunity to use a wealth of defensive assets to acquire what they need at forwards, you know, similar to what they did Tyson Barrie for Nazem Kadri a couple years ago. Granted, that trade looked one-sided when it happened. It ended up one-sided at the end. Nazem Kadri won a cup. Barrie was not long for Toronto. So I'm not saying they're going to come away with another steal of a trade like that, but Bowen Byram is better than Tyson Barrie. So, well, at least looks to have a brighter future, I should say, in the moment. So what I basically think about Bo is, not only do I think the Avalanche eventually need to trade him before he's up for another contract and before he's up for an opportunity to, you know, want to cash in and be a number one defenseman somewhere, kind of spread his wings and fly, which he deserves to do. He is a top defenseman. What I have a theory about for him is that I think it's going to happen sooner than we think, in the terms that it'll happen this offseason. And the reason why I predict that is because I think Byram's agents, well, first of all, the Avalanche need forward help in terms of a second line center. But I think Byram's agents and Bo Byram himself, if you gave him truth serum, would prefer that the second year of his bridge contract, making just over $3.8 million, he would prefer to play that on a team where he is able to play 21, 22, 23 plus minutes a night and really cash in the summer of 2025, rather than get traded as an RFA in the summer of 2025 to a team who wants to pay him based off of what they project he can be on the top line. He wants the ability to prove it. In my opinion, that's the way it's going to shake out. So whether it's Bo Byram or whether it's Sam Girard, Sam Molinsky and the way he's playing makes it a little bit easier to stomach to trade one of these guys. Because right now the Avalanche have four left-handed defensemen. You know, they've been shifting one of them to the right here and there. But they got Devon Taves, Bo Byram, Sam Girard, and Jack Johnson. On the right side, from their top six, it's Cale Makar and Josh Manson. But if you shift Molinsky into the lineup, you have a clear right-handed shot defenseman side of Makar, Manson, Molinsky, all the M's. And on the left, you have Taves, let's say, Gerard and then Jack Johnson for this season, you're obviously going to want to bring in some help, because the same thing I was saying about their depth forwards and needing help there, I'm assuming you're going to need the same thing on defense. But what if you use, because of Malinsky, you don't wait till the offseason, what if you use Bowen Byram or maybe Sam Gerard, but I think Bowen Byram makes more sense because of the cost certainty of Gerard's contract. What if you use someone like Bo to bring in a second line center? And one of the ideas that comes to mind, again, zero insider information, is a trade centered around Bowen Byram and Joel Eriksson-Ek in Minnesota. Because in Minnesota, their captain Jared Spurgeon's about to have two surgeries and he's out for the season. And in Minnesota, they have a lot of young offensive forwards in terms of Marco Rossi, Matthew Boldy. They still have Kaprizov under contract. Obviously, Joel Eriksson-Ek, who's only 26, he'll be 27 in a week. They have a lot of forwards. Defense, their future's not as bright. They have a killer rookie in Brock Faber, who just so happens to be a right shot defenseman. What if Minnesota was to sacrifice one of their top centers, well, arguably their top center, Joel Eriksson-Ek, 26-year-old, almost 27-year-old Swedish forward, centerman, with 18 goals and 15 assists, 33 points in 45 games, coming off of a season where he had 61 in 78, and the season before that when the Avs won the Cup where he had 49 in 77. What if the Minnesota Wild sacrifice that player, who, by the way, also plays big shorthanded minutes, he's already got 3 shorthanded goals and 5 shorthanded points, they sacrifice that player knowing they have Marco Rossi in the wings to stack up on defense with a Byram-Faber duo for the future? And I know what y'all are thinking. It sounds icky to put Bowen Byram in a Minnesota Wild jersey, but that's just an example of the type of move. And again, there would be other pieces surrounding it. You know, maybe the Avalanche can do, like, one of my favorite things about the deadline last year for some of the top teams in the NHL is how they always added a secondary piece to the trade. Toronto went out and got Ryan O'Reilly. They also got Noah Lachari. Boston went out and got Dmitry Orlov. They also got Garnett Hathaway. The New York Rangers went out and got Vladimir Tarasenko. They also plugged a hole with Nico Mikkola on defense. So what if the Avalanche makes some kind of trade centered around Byram for Eriksson-Ek, which, by the way, I think right now Eriksson-Ek probably has the better value and is the better player, so the Avalanche would be the one adding a little bit. But what if they also, in that same deal, brought in Marc-Andre Fleury, maybe shifted out a draft pick, maybe shifted out Pavel Francouz's contract, who's going to be on LTIR for the rest of the year, maybe found a way to make the salary cap work? You know, Elliot Friedman on 32 Thoughts mentioned the other day that Marc-Andre Fleury and Colorado would be a good match. And that would be the type of team that he might, you know, be willing to waive his no trade for. So what if there is a trade to be had there, and then you end up with a second line center, and then you have what I said. Obviously, this would mean Jack Johnson's in your top six. You've taken away from your D, but you've also upgraded your goaltending help. And you've added a second line center who I think we need to start looking at what forwards mean to a team defense as well. Because the Avalanche aren't playing great team defense, but it's not because of the defensemen they have. It just seems like they haven't been a fully cohesive unit at times. A lot of new players coming in and kind of trying to catch on to that team chemistry and everything. But I genuinely think someone like Joel Eriksson-Ek, who is a strong two-way forward that can give you 55 to 65 points offensively, is the type of player they could use, especially if you were to combine him with a Valeri Nichushkin and Minival Arturi Lehkonen into a hard-working shutdown line that also gives you offense and is in your top six. It also gives you the ability to play Wood, Colton, and O'Connor as the third line, not the current second line, because Nichushkin's out, Lehkonen's hurt, and Ryan Johansson isn't giving you what a second line center should give you. So that's just an idea of a trade. And that all stems from kind of the thoughts in my head because of the Sam Malinsky, kind of the rise of Malinsky and what he's been able to do has made me feel like, hey, this idea that I've had of Bo Byram probably not being long for the Avalanche in his future, Again, not because of any animosity, but because he deserves to be a number one somewhere, and Taves and Makar are both going to be here long term. Because of that, you know, I still always feel Bo Byram will be the next one traded. But maybe because of the rise of Malinsky, you can do that this year. Is it risky? Yes. But it would give you a top four of Taves and Makar and Gerard and Manson, who have been playing together lately, and Manson looks pretty good. You know, we're not talking about how he's on pace for 30-plus points and playing good two-way hockey. And then your third pair is Malinsky and Jack Johnson, maybe Caleb Jones. Maybe you bring in another depth guy for a second or third rounder, and you still bring Jack Johnson down to number seven, and Malinsky's playing with some other veteran. So there are options there to make it all work. Obviously, the salary cap is fickle, and you got to find a way to make that work. You're going to have to probably trade out Ryan Johansson in some other deal if it's not in the Minnesota deal. But just a thought and just an idea of a deal, and just a thought and an idea of conversations that I've been having with myself and thoughts that I've been having because of what Malinsky has shown. So keep that in your brain for a little bit here as we, like I said, are 47 days away from the NHL trade deadline this year. Let me know what you think about potentially doing something like that. Tweet at me at RunRightArif, RunRightArif. Let me know what you think. I'm genuinely curious. You know, I don't want to spend a lot of time breaking down a whole bunch of aspects of the game or a whole bunch of aspects of this team, because there are plenty of podcasts to be had between now and the deadline. But Alexander Georgiev, it is a conversation to have there. In terms of his workload, and, you know, I just kind of solved it really quickly off the top of my head with potentially bringing in that secondary piece and Marc-Andre Fleury in a deal like that. But regardless, I think there's something there, and I do want to end the show with what I teased in the beginning. Whopper news from the New York Islanders just as the Avalanche game ended. Lou Lamoriello announced that the team has fired Lane Lambert and replaced him with one Patrick Waugh. Patty Waugh is going to be joining the New York Islanders as their head coach following an Islanders loss in overtime to the Chicago Blackhawks on Friday, which was kind of the game that really put an end to the Lane Lambert era. The Islanders are 32nd in a lot of defensive and offensive metrics. Despite that, they have a 19-15-11 record, 49 points in 45 games, 2 wins in their last 10. They should be better than that. How much better are they? I don't know. And that's something we're going to figure out. But they should be a hell of a lot better than they have shown. And I am so excited to see what Patrick Waugh brings. So the fun part about it is that Lou Lamoriello ran the New Jersey Devils in 2001 when Patrick Waugh was the goaltender for the Colorado Avalanche that beat the New Jersey Devils and Marty Brodeur. Just as I say that, which is hilarious, a tweet just came out from Arthur Staple at The Athletic, because Patrick Waugh is speaking in a conference call right now, and Patrick Waugh said, quote, "The only subject we weren't allowed to talk about was the Stanley Cup in 2001. That's a little joke." And then Lou said, "It's not a joke." So those guys are already taking friendly jabs at each other for that relationship from the Avalanche beating the Devils 23 years ago. But now they are on the same team. Patrick Waugh reunited with goalie Semyon Varlamov, who is the New York Islanders' backup goalie, and who is locked up for this year plus 3 more years. A decade ago, Patrick Waugh, Semyon Varlamov, and the Colorado Avalanche nearly won the President's Trophy. They were one of the top teams in the West before ultimately falling to the Minnesota Wild in 7 games. But Semyon Varlamov is 6-4-2 with a .918 save percentage this year. He has just been such a model of consistency since leaving the Avs and joining the Islanders. 914, 929, 911, 913, 918. Man, the Avalanche would love to have Semyon as their second goalie on this team, but he makes 2.75 and he's locked up for 3 more years. Lou Lamoriello and the Islanders love the 35-year-old Semyon Varlamov. So I am so excited to see what the Patrick Waugh era brings in his second go-around with the NHL as a head coach, I should say. Third go-around if you include his player career as well, playing career. I also think it's hilarious that on Sunday, by the time you guys are listening to this, the New York Islanders host Matt Duchene and the Dallas Stars in Patty's first game as head coach. And I would pay a lot of money to be a reporter covering the morning skate just to ask Matt Duchene his thoughts on Patrick Waugh coming back to the NHL. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Really great to see Patty back in the NHL. The NHL's better with Waugh back in it. Would I want him coaching the team that I cover? Probably not. But we know that's not the case because Jared Bednar is here to stay and has been, aside from that first year after Patrick Waugh quit on the Avs, a wonderful head coach. So that's it here for me, Arif Dean of Mile High Sports. You're listening to Hockey Mountain High, your go-to Avalanche podcast. I kind of want to get back in the theme of closing out the show we used to in years past. If you made it this far in the podcast, bless your pretty little heart. Let's make hockey for everyone, and we out ya.